Good morning to you and the other members of the court. Please, the court. Again, Eric Peterson, your plaintiff. Rosemary Hem. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. We are here on a certified question from the United States District Court for the District of Nebraska. The question is, may an insurer, in determining the actual cash value of a covered loss, depreciate the cost of labor when the terms actual cash value and depreciation are not defined in the policy, and the policy does not explicitly state that labor costs can be depreciated? Ms. Hen requests that the certified question be answered in the negative for two reasons. First, under the method of calculating actual cash value used by American families, used almost universally by other structural property insurers, which is replacement cost value less depreciation. If labor costs are depreciated, under indemnification results, as this court held in DNS Realty in 2012, the purpose of an actual cash value payment is indemnification of the insured. Accordingly, when labor costs are depreciated, under indemnification results, and that's inconsistent with Nebraska law. Second,
how is it under indemnification?
It depends on the claim. It can be very significant. For example, a large, and this actual cash value payment can apply to homeowners claims, it can apply to business owners claims, and farmers claims. So in Ms. Hen's claim, it was a relatively minor depreciation that was deducted. The replacement cost value, in other words, the cost to replace the damaged material of the building as a result of the covered loss with new items, new components, new materials, would have been $3,252 as calculated here. The American family deducted $276.67 in total depreciation. A certain amount of that was labor. So it's a small amount here. But for example, if it was a business that owned a large commercial building, it would be a much larger magnitude. Same for a farm that lost a large barn. It could be a significant amount.
But she could have recovered the full amount by actually conducting the repairs, correct, and then receiving the full replacement cost.
Thank you for that question. She could, although insureds are not required to actually perform the repairs in order to be entitled to the actual cash value payment. There, in this policy, like a lot of policies, there is a two-step process for recovering the claim, and I think that's what your question goes to. The first step, and that's explored in this court's DNS Realty case. It clearly lays out the two-step process. In the first step, it's the actual cash value payment. That's the payment that is made immediately following the loss. And there's no requirement that the insured use that to actually make repairs. That payment, still under Nebraska law, must indemnify the insured. The second step is once the insured actually makes the repairs, the insured may be entitled to an additional payment that makes that insured whole for the replacement cost of new material items.
You said may. When would be the situation we're talking about?
If it was not a replacement cost value policy. So there.
But that's what we're talking about.
Well, in the case that was. In the case that's pending before Judge Battalion in the U.S. District Court, it is a replacement cost value policy. But the certified question is not limited to replacement cost value policy.
So, the question, what is the record that you actually look at in this case?
The record is limited at this point. It has not been fully developed in the U.S. District Court. The court can review the record as it stands in the U.S. District Court. Both parties have cited to the docket entries in federal court.
You can take judicial notice of everything that's over in the file in the federal district.
Correct. Correct. And the certified question should be answered in the negative for the additional reason that the policy does not unambiguously allow for depreciation of labor costs.
And why do you say that?
Well, for a number of reasons. The policy here does not define actual cash value. It does not define depreciation. In fact, this policy does not even use the term depreciation in addressing actual cash value. This court has addressed a similar situation in 2005 in Olson v. Lamars, where an actual cash value provision of a policy did not mention the term depreciation. The insurer attempted to depreciate costs, repair costs, to calculate actual cash value, and this court held that in a policy like that, that does not include a specific, which does not expressly provide otherwise, an insurer may not deduct depreciation from the cost of repairing a partial loss. So this court assumed
a partial loss.
The key there was a partial loss, but the holding makes clear that if the insurer had expressly provided that in the policy, the insurer likely would have been able to deduct depreciation. Here, in the American Family policy, the policy does not even mention the term depreciation. It certainly does not mention labor depreciation. For that reason, the policy is ambiguous. As to the indemnification, the method used here by American Family results in under-indemnification because of the depreciation of labor costs. Plaintiffs agree with the insurer that material costs should be depreciated in calculating actual cash value. In other words, the value of a used 2x4, for example, is less than the value of a new 2x4, the cost of a new 2x4 at the lumber. Plaintiffs agree with the insurer there. But the labor costs to remove and reinstall that 2x4, that used 2x4, again, under insurer's method here, is not subject to depreciation under the replacement cost less depreciation approach. A brief example highlights that. If a farmer's fence, a 10-year-old fence, it was aged, it was subject to wear and tear. I'll like to reserve my 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you very much. Good morning to you, sir, and you are Mr. McCarthy.
No, I'm Michael McCarthy.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court,
Michael McCarthy, appearing with Barton Clay and McCarthy on behalf of American Family Insurance.
We have obviously urged this court to answer the certified question in the affirmative. In doing so, the threshold question that has been presented by the dispute below, and Your Honor, I would mention that the record that's been developed in the federal court, I believe, is available for this court to review, and that includes the insurance policy, which I will discuss. It comes up on cross motions for summary judgment, which was the point in the case below that Judge Battalion referred to the case for. But on the threshold question of ambiguity, actual cash value requires no definition in the property and casualty insurance context under Nebraska law. Going back to 1953 in the Morgan case, this court clearly established the meaning under Nebraska law for actual cash value. The law.
Have we clearly established that?
I believe you have, Your Honor. And there are, it's a a trilogy of cases that achieves that. They start with Borden in 1953 and continues on to the Aaron Rancho case in, I believe it's 1984. And then most significantly, the opinion of Justice McCormick in D&S Realty against Markel Insurance Company at 816 Northwest 2nd 1. It's a 2012 opinion. The law in Nebraska, and I believe I can say this because there's a wave of these cases involving labor depreciation going on in the center of the country, in Nebraska, Kansas, and Missouri. The law in Nebraska stands out among those cases and those controversies as being extraordinarily well-developed. And what you see in the opinion of Justice McCormick in particular, but you can, the genesis goes right back to Borden. What the Nebraska court, what this court has said is that actual cash value in the property and casualty context means fair market value. It means fair market value taking into account any other appropriate facts and circumstances. And consequently, Your Honor, to answer the question in the negative, the certified question in the negative, would create a situation in which an insurer, when they write property and casualty insurance in Nebraska against the background of that case law, would do so at its peril. They would be confronted with a situation where the well-established law of the state would be disregarded based upon a contention which essentially we're confronted with here, that to use the naked term, freestanding actual cash value, is to introduce facial ambiguity into the contract. And nothing could be further than, in this case, more invisible. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
We also talk about the law and it's real.
You have, Your Honor. It actually, as I read the case law, Your Honor, it isn't quite the same thing. And in fact, I think
the definition of cash value is settled, man.
Well, I would refer the court to the language of Justice McCormick in the D&S Realty case, where, speaking on behalf of the court, Justice McCormick said that actual cash value is replacement cost less depreciation. And I'm paraphrasing to some degree, but that is what he said. And then he went on behalf of the court to say that the concept of fair market value is well recognized here, and it is what a reasonable, it is what a seller would pay to a buyer, both of them under no compulsion, with additional circumstances taken into account. And so what it is, Your Honor, and again, I think this is not, it's not unclear. It is a bit of a hybrid in the sense that it includes the willing buyer and willing seller, and it also incorporates any other factual circumstances that would bear upon it. And these cases come up in the context of jury instructions. So it's really quite specific in terms of what this court has approved as far as the definition of actual cash value. And so what American Family did here, Your Honor, is it relied on the case law of the jurisdiction. And it's sort of an old adage of trial law that less is often more. What can happen when you go beyond what is a well-established definition is you can, in fact, find yourself in territory of ambiguity. Because you can see from some of the other cases that have been cited here where American Family and other insurers have gone beyond actual cash value, they've included a definition. Well, that definition has been seized upon to say it creates ambiguity. So it's potentially a no-win situation, and when confronted with that, what American Family did here was it did what we submit it was entitled to do, and it relied upon the well-established settled definition in the three cases that I mentioned in this jurisdiction.
Could you speak directly to the idea of depreciating labor? I mean, if we go with the idea that fair market value is the appropriate definition, wouldn't that suggest restoring the property where it was before the loss, the fair market value, correct?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
So to restore the property to that, understandably, you could use older materials that depreciate the value. But how do you do that with labor?
And Your Honor, the concept of immunizing or excising the replacement cost value of labor, which is what is being talked about here, from the exercise by which you determine fair market value is analytically incoherent, and I don't know how else to say it. I think if any number of the justices, I suspect, have litigated valuation cases in the eminent domain context, in any number of contexts, and I think I can say with comfort that if you were to say to an expert witness or an appraiser or a judge that the process by which you determine fair market value requires you to excise the labor that would be required to replace the property, they would just shake their head. It is in all circumstances taken into account fair what a willing buyer would pay a willing seller. The concept that labor
ask in another way. I mean, how does one appreciate labor?
And Your Honor, I would respectfully submit that the mischief here starts with the deconstruction of that which is ensured by the policy to focus on labor. So let me put it another way.
Let's ask this: how did you do it in this case?
I'm sorry,
how did we do it in this case?
In this case, what happened was there was an estimate made of what would be required to replace the property as a whole.
Material and labor?
Material and labor. But Your Honor, there are other pieces to that too. Depending upon the loss, there can be general contractor overhead.
How about this case? How are we doing this?
In this case, it was labor and materials subject to depreciation. And the reason why that fits with Nebraska law can be found in the...
I've only interrupted, but how are you actually depreciating the labor? Are you bringing in an expert that says, well, it would be $1,000 if I rebuilt this, but my depreciated value? I mean, are you bringing experts in? Are you just picking a number and saying that's the number we're going to use?
Actually, Your Honor, the answer to that is there's a computer program, and all insurers do this, that has an application that conducts, that calculates the labor and materials and applies a depreciation factor based upon the age of the structure.
So you're just picking a number. You don't really know what the depreciated value of labor is, right?
No, Your Honor, I think that what is being done here is being depreciated based upon the age of the entire property. Because when you look at the policy, and this is the point that I've been trying to get to, you have to ask, what does actual cash value apply to? And what actual cash value applies to is answered by the language of the insurance policy. And in the loss valuation language of the policy, what it talks about, Your Honor, it talks about the dwelling or the building. And this is consistent with Rancho Mirage, which talks about an economic unit. And under fair market value analysis, you don't deconstruct everything to come up with a fair market value for the improved real property. So what American Family doesn't insure later as a freestanding asset, it ensures improved real property. And that's why fair market value makes sense, because I think, as we all know, you can apply the concept of fair market value to improved real property, and that's what the policy says is supposed to happen.
So the rate of depreciation is the same for material and labor based on the age of the structure.
That's essentially correct, Your Honor, and is consistent with looking at the improved real property as an economic unit, which is what this court talked about in Aaron Rancher.
I was a similar question, but I was wondering specifically how many years you give the either a general term as to what length of time structure will exist, and use in depreciation, you do it over a 20-year period, you do it over a 40-year period.
Your Honor, what the actual claims adjustment process entails is a judgment on a structure-by-structure basis of what the useful life of the entire structure is. So if a garage has a 20-year life, and it's been standing for 10 years, there'll be a 50% depreciation rate applied to it.
And that determination is simply made by the adjuster.
It's made by the adjuster using a computer program. But again, that manner of adjusting the claim is not dictated by the policy. It's something that is done as a matter of trying to expedite the claims handling process. At the end of the day, as far as what this court is confronted with in the labor depreciation question, is what is the fair market value of the unit? And if you were to include the undepreciated amount that it would take to replace that structure, what you were doing is exactly what this court has expressed concern about, which is to create a moral hazard, because you are over-indemnifying the insured, because you are paying the insured the full amount of labor that would be required to rebuild the structure, even though the insured has not rebuilt the structure.
Do you appreciate the premium?
I'm sorry, Aaron?
Do you appreciate the premium each year? Then if you're providing less coverage each year, you're still charging the same amount.
Your Honor, the premium would not be depreciated, because again, it wouldn't be a piece of that to which actual cash value applies, namely the building. Because you're looking at,
in that theory, you're still charging the full premium, but you're paying half the amount of the replacement cost.
But Your Honor, the premium though is being paid for that which the policy provides for, and the policy here,
higher risk beginning. And you do 10 years out, because now you can depreciate 50% of the premium costs.
That's correct, Your Honor, but that's only if the insured chooses not to repair or rebuild.
Or if it doesn't have that cost. If it doesn't have replacement cost.
Those policies are fairly rare, Your Honor, but if it doesn't have that clause in it, then what's done is the insured is paid the fair market value of the improved real property at the point in time immediately prior to that, to the point when the casualty occurred. As depreciated, because that's embedded. Less depreciation, Your Honor.
Or a partial loss.
Correct, Your Honor. That's important. That's very important.
Or loss. You pay the stated value of loss.
I believe that's under, I want to be not so quick to say that. I think under an actual cash value policy, if it was a total loss, then the improved real property would be reimbursed based upon what its value was, its full value, at the moment immediately prior to the casualty occurring. Well, there would be, I believe there would be depreciation involved in that, because an appraiser would tell you, if I've got to come up with the value of something that was destroyed, I'm going to take into account what its replacement cost was, less depreciation, which is what Justice McCormick said in D&S Realty you should do.
If you have a $100,000 policy and a fire burns the house down, the stated value under the policy, the brass gets, I understand, 40 years has been a state of value state, you get the 100,000.
Your Honor, I defer to I'm obviously going to defer to your knowledge and the grasp on that. And I can't speak to that, because what I know about here is the policy that was involved here, which was a replacement cost policy. And there was a mention of the Lamar's case during the appellant's presentation. The Lamar's case was an actual cash value only case. And it was a very unusual case, because the value repaired, as repaired there in a partial loss, ended up being actually less than or equal to the value immediately before the loss, which is not usually the case. So Lamar's is really a one-off kind of case under Nebraska jurisprudence, as I read that law. And I go back to that trilogy of cases, which I think really have to drive the outcome here, I would respect. Thank you for indulging me.
We have battery up.
He has a minute 53.
We have a minute 53. Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. I'd like to briefly respond to a couple of points made by counsel. Number one,
that an American Family relied on the case law of the jurisdiction in issuing this policy and in depreciating labor costs here. This, as I mentioned earlier, the case of Olson v. Lamar, as this court's opinion from 2005 holds that if an insurer does not expressly provide that depreciation may be taken from repair costs for calculating after tax value, under the circumstances of that case, it couldn't take any depreciation. And so this policy does not use the term depreciation in discussing actual cash value.
Counsel, you agree with me that if there were a total loss, the policy would pay the state for that, correct?
I'm not certain of that either, and I, but counsel would defer to Your Honor on that. But counsel also takes issue with this deconstruction into labor and material costs. That's exactly what the insurer did here.
Counsel, you admitted that you were okay with depreciation as to material,
correct,
but not for labor.
That's correct.
Even the policy doesn't talk about depreciation for materials for labor.
That's the
difference.
Well, the difference is that to achieve indemnity, which again is what's required of an actual cash value payment, using this method, which is what they used, they did not use the market value approach. They used replacement cost less depreciation. To achieve indemnity under that model, consistent with Nebraska law, materials should be depreciated. Again, the old 2x4 is worth less than a new 2x4, but using their method, which looks at, it's not an appraisal, it's not a market value calculation, it's essentially a contractor or a computer program that it looks at a building as a contractor. What would it cost to replace this damaged building or damaged portion of the building with new materials? Materials and labor. You to indemnify, as opposed to give them brand new materials, which admittedly would be over indemnification, to indemnify under actual cash value, you depreciate the value of that 2x4, but labor costs cannot be depreciated.
Counsel, I'm having a problem. If you have the actual cash value of, let's say, a piece of property, let's say $100,000, this is $100,000, and it's 5 years old, and there's been some damage to it, you've got to determine the actual cash value of that damage. How do you not determine the value of the property at this time? And when you do that, you have to take into consideration the cost of replacement, right? And if you heard talk about the cost of replacing it, then you talk about both the cost of materials and the rents.
I think that's correct, and I hope this addresses Your Honor's question. I think if you use the market value approach, looking at the market value, the actual cash value of the building prior to the loss, I mean, it's a partial loss in Your Honor's example. So you look at what a buyer would pay for that structure immediately before the covered loss. And then you look at what a buyer would pay for that structure immediately after the covered loss. That buyer would price into the after loss price the cost of restoring that damaged structure to its state pre-loss. And that buyer would need to price in the used materials, not new materials. That would increase the pre-loss actual cash value. But you need to price in the value of the used materials and the cost of removing the damaged materials and replacing those materials with the aged materials that match those materials as they exist in the building immediately prior to the loss.
What if the buyer chose to accept the property and to keep it without restoration? The difference that the company would owe would be the difference between fair market value immediately before the loss and fair market value immediately after the loss.
Which would be equal, I believe that's correct, but that would be equal to replacement costs less depreciation of materials and undepreciated labor costs.
Depends on what the market is.
That's correct. It's not how
American assure you there are places in Nebraska that the replacement cost of a house far exceeds the fair market value of the house.
Correct. And again, that's not how American Family calculated the actual cash value here. They calculated it using the replacement cost value and the price to build a brand new house with brand new materials, less depreciation.
But that simply is a means of approximating what that loss of fair market value or actual cash value is, correct?
Correct.
Correct.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We will go on to the next case of the day, which is Anderson versus the Pacific Railroad Company. I thank both members of the Court of Appeals for participating in the initial case. Please note that Justice Norman Lerman is also recused from this matter.